You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a Milwaukee journalist shares his thoughts on what should be taken from the weekend's protests and why he says the looting shouldn't overshadow the core message. Now, as downtown Madison businesses assess their damages from two nights of protests and looting, our next guest is working to help them recover. After peaceful protests demanding justice for George Floyd on Saturday, a smaller group of people shattered storefront windows on State Street, looted, threw rocks at police, and caused other destruction. That's when Michael Johnson, the president and CEO of the Boys and Girls Club of Dane County, took to social media to ask for volunteers to clean up the mess. The group also set up a GoFundMe account to help downtown businesses. So far, more than $130,000 have been raised toward a goal of $200,000. Michael Johnson joins us now. Michael, good to have you back with us.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
What's your reaction to the violence that took place in Madison after the peaceful protests, Madison and other cities around the country?
Yeah, let me first say, and I think, you know, I warned people of this the other day that, you know, I am all for people protesting. I think people's voices should be heard. But under no conditions should people be out looting, breaking into businesses, setting police cars on fire. Those are all criminal offenses, and it's unacceptable. And how dare anyone do these criminal activities in the name of George Floyd? And so, one, I don't appreciate it. I don't think our community appreciate it. And from what I saw, there was a bunch of But I believe, from what I saw in the videos, you know, there were some local people, but mainly I think there were outside agitators that came into our city and our state doing these criminal activities, and it shouldn't be accepted.
Now, you, as we mentioned, started that GoFundMe account aimed at helping downtown businesses. Kind of on the spot, you did this. Talk about why you did it and the response you've gotten.
You know, I was hurt. I was angry to see what happened to, you know, Mr. Floyd in Minneapolis. I have family that live in South Minneapolis. I went to University of Minnesota. I met my wife at the University of Minnesota. And it was just traumatic for my family, you know, to watch that video. And so I wanted to figure out a way to respond. So immediately after he was killed, I called all the police chiefs and challenged them publicly to denounce what these police officers did, and to their credit, every last one of them responded. I then put out a call to action once I saw that businesses were being looted, you know, in downtown Madison. And what a lot of people don't know, over 50% of those businesses are women and minority owned. 70% of those businesses are local entrepreneurs that live in Dane County. So I put out a call for people, and I asked for 100 volunteers, and 3,000 signed up. We asked to raise $50,000. We've raised almost $150,000. You know, and so these are small businesses that support the ecosystem of our region, and I just wanted to play a small part to be able to support them, because they did not deserve for their businesses to be damaged the way that it was.
And as you said earlier, you don't like seeing the looting, the violence. Does that take away from the message that you're hoping people are talking about right now?
I think it does. You know, when I look at, you know, some of the groups who are organizing during the daytime, they have their messages, and I think we should listen and seek understanding instead of being understood. But those who are out there throwing rocks at police officers, burning down stores, breaking into businesses, I am asking you to stop it. If you have family members who are doing this, call your kids, because you do that and you kill somebody or you catch a felony, those felonies don't go away. It stick with you for life. And I just think that it's inexcusable, and it shouldn't be tolerated. And even George's family have asked people to stop it. Mm-hmm. And that's just a better way that we can go about doing this. And it just shouldn't be accepted.
Talking to Michael Johnson, president and CEO of the Boys and Girls Club of Dane County, talking about his response to the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis, the protests, the negative protests that he says should stop, and what he hopes happens next. And Michael, let's turn to that now. You had a piece that came out in the Cap Times today, one of the Madison papers. you're hoping that this time, after all the times we've been through similar conversations in the last years and decades and centuries, that something can change. What do you think it would take to get fundamental change here?
You know, I think that, you know, we just keep having these conversations, right? And so I broke down, you know, in my article, you know, you think about, you know, the article is titled, I Can't Breathe. You know, and so these incidents continue to happen to, you know, black men, you know, all across the country. And there's pretty much five things that I recommended. One, that in every municipality in Wisconsin, that each community get together and they look at what our use of force policies are. Make sure that you look at it from an equitable lens and make sure that our police officers are being trained around use of force and that there's community buy-in to that. Two, that people continue to have peaceful protests. They have town hall meetings. I think that's very therapeutic for those conversations to take place. But where the rubber does not meet the road is when it's time to fund and execute on the ideas and concerns that people bring forward. Three, I think that we have to demand policy changes and invest in sustainable long-term programming that impact African-American families. When you look at racial disparities in Wisconsin, African-Americans are like I love Wisconsin, right? But the fact that we have the largest racial achievement gap in this country is unacceptable, and we are better than that, and we just got to do a better job. And then the fourth one is challenging our nonprofit organizations and our schools to not be afraid to create programs that are targeted to African-American families. When you see videos like this, families are traumatized when they see this stuff, and we got to be able to support them mentally and also their emotional needs. And then the fifth one, I would say, you know, I have raised funds for so many, like just last week I was raising funds for Ahmaud Avery's family in Georgia and brought his mother and his sister to Wisconsin for a virtual town hall meeting to help his sister finish her master's degree. And when these families go through things like this, they don't have resources, they don't have access to illegal services. So creating a fund in every state to be able to support families that go through challenges like this, and with us investing in closing the racial achievement gap in our state. And those are just some recommendations I threw out, and we can do this. This is a smart state, and if we make this a priority, let's not wait another 50 years to address these issues.
And Michael, I want to quote from your piece here in the Cap Times. You write, our black community is mentally and physically drained, retired, and we're angry. Can you talk about that, that just having that weight on you?
You know, it's you keep seeing these issues, you know, happen over and over and over again, and people ask you all the time, how can we fix it? How can we address it? And it just takes a toll on your body and your spirit and mentally. It's you think about like black mothers who are afraid to have their sons to go, you know, outside. And it's just, it's draining. And it's and no matter how many times we talk about these issues, they just seem to continue to happen. And when you see videos of the lack of humanity for black men when these kinds of issues happen, it's devastating. And our kids see it, our community see it, and that people need to address it. And I don't think the black community can do it by itself. It's going to take business leaders. It's going to take our white neighbors. It's going to take our lawmakers helping us to change and become the fabric state that we ought to be.
Michael, we'll leave it there for now. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
All right, thanks for having me.
That's Michael Johnson, president and CEO of the Boys and Girls Club of Dane County. We talked to him about weekend protests and then later looting in Madison, cleanup efforts that he's worked on, and what to do to try to tackle issues of race in the United States. Coming up, we talk with a comedian in Wisconsin Rapids who created her own state news show from inside her parents' house. That's up next here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we meet a Wisconsinite doing what she can to get out the vote with the help of some comic relief and her family. Right now, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Brad Kohlberg with a story about one of his family's favorite spots at Devil's Lake.
My family likes to go camping a lot. And when I was a kid back in the 80s, one of our favorite spots was Devil's Lake. We hiked the bluffs and played games of 500 with a tennis ball at the beach. We dove into the water off a big flat boulder along the tumbled rocks trail we nicknamed the Big Kahuna. But there was a spot in the Quartzsite campground that blew my mind as a kid, and we called it the Hill That Goes Up That Goes Down. One weekend, our family was cruising up the middle lane of the campground on our bikes. The road up ahead appeared to rise slightly through a patch of woods, but as we made our way through the trees, we picked up speed and had to hit the brakes. That was weird. I looked back over my shoulder, and sure enough, we had just cruised up a little hill. For comment, let's go to Dan Kohlberg, my dad.
Yeah, I remember that. We got down to the other end of the road and kind of said, wow, that was different. I mean, it looked like we were going to be going up a hill, and instead we coasted all the way here.
Back at the campsite, I remember my kid brain searching for an explanation. Was the spot enchanted by some sort of magic, magnetic, geologic, gravitational anomaly?
Regardless of what the cause is, I mean, it's like one of the seven wonders of Devil's Lake.
For the rest of the trip, my parents cooked dinner, sipped coffee, played cards, cracked peanuts. But my brother and I were back on our bikes, up, down, eyes wide and laughing. So what was really happening there? Well, when I want to know something, but I don't want to Google it, I like to ask my old friend Bob Sundling, who's always known quite a bit about quite a lot.
Hey, Bob.
Hello, Brad. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
So Bob says that if the horizon is obscured, then other visual clues like trees tell us what the lay of the land really is.
But in an area with dominant winds, if the wind's always been blowing from one direction, all trees may have grown with a slight downwind lean. And it might only be a few degrees, but it's enough that our brains are thinking, oh, that's straight.
Huh.
We tend to think we have a good inherent ability to judge up and down and horizontal and vertical, but it really depends on these external clues.
Okay, so it's not that I was just riding my bike in some wonder spot.
Probably not. I mean, it is possible, for example, that there was, say, a black hole passing through the Earth's atmosphere at that time. And I think you would have probably noticed a few other strange things happening too, like, maybe the end of the world or, you know, that type of thing.
The hill that goes up, that goes down.
Last summer, on a camping trip to Devil's Lake, my daughter and I grabbed our bikes and headed up the middle lane of the Quartzsite campground. She'd heard all about this magic spot in the trees and wanted to try it out for herself.
It was pretty weird because by the looks of it, we should have been pedaling harder than usual to go up a hill. But when we actually got to it, it was easy coasting and we just went right down, even though it looked like we were going up. The hill that goes up, that goes down.
Maybe we'll head back to Devil's Lake this summer and relive this goofy little bit of magic in our lives. It makes me grateful for this world that always seems to have a surprise waiting just up the road. Or down. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Brad Kohlberg.
Now, Kristen Bry can be pretty helpful around the house. Here she is assisting her mother in their Wisconsin Rapids home.
I'm going to try to work on finding out how to do that absentee ballot thing again. You know, I thought I'll do it for the rest of the election stuff, and I have this done because who knows what's going to happen. But kind of use your help again.
Didn't I already show you how to do this?
Yeah, but I think I forgot. So could you please help me? Please.
So, go to My Vote.
That's from a short video Bri made that breaks down how to vote absentee here in Wisconsin. She produced it for her new web series aimed at empowering Wisconsin voters, aided by comedy, called As Goes Wisconsin. And Kristen joins us now to talk a little more about it. Kristen, welcome to Central Time.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, this is a project I understand that came about at least partly because of the circumstances of the coronavirus pandemic. So how did this web series get started?
Yes. So I'm from Madison. My parents are from Central Wisconsin, Wisconsin Rapids. I spent my dad, both of them went to the UW. My dad played basketball for the Badgers. So big Wisconsin family. I, on the other hand, have been living either in California or New York from home my whole life and then just coming back to visit. I had thought I was going to come back for this year to actually try to make more of a documentary about swing voters and inconsistent voters and basically all the target demographics of people that are they're trying to get the vote out this year because Wisconsin is such an important swing state. And so I thought I would come home for the primary and start to get footage and very quickly could not get any footage because we were all in our houses. And so I tried to improvise by interviewing people on Zoom and recording that. And then the idea was planted to me that there was, because of the election on April 7th, there was basically a dearth of information of how do you actually do absentee ballots with the voter ID part of it. And so I made that first video with my mom of helping her get her absentee ballot. And then that one did so well. So then I made another one about checking the status of your absentee ballot. And then I made one with my grandmother about getting a witness for your ballot. And they were just getting so much traction that I was like, all right, I think there's something here that is probably a better use of my time and could impact more people than a hindsight 2020 documentary might. And so I dropped that idea. And now basically moving forward and just trying to put out as much content as I can between now and the election that is basically ranging from the news to how-to videos about I'm going to register to vote in Wisconsin and document that. But then also doing like deep dive issues and trying to make complicated, sometimes boring information a little bit more palatable by using comedy.
Yeah. How do you take stuff that sounds like maybe our dimmest memories of civics class in high school and make it fun?
Well, it's a lot of charisma will help. a comedic timing will help. Silly analogies. But sometimes it's really hard. I think it's a combination of getting the most important points across and really like in my practice of doing some of this before, it's like it's doing a ton of research and then literally paring it down to the most important information and then layering jokes on top of it. Because I know for myself, the superstars of this, whether it's Last Week Tonight and John Oliver or Jon Stewart or Trevor Noah, or some of these, like the way that they make the news just more accessible to people who are so turned off by the news these days, like is just like what I really aspire to be. And I think it's really helpful and also necessary because sometimes people also just need to laugh.
Now, you've worked in California and New York, as you said, but it turns out the perfect cast members for your project were what, quarantining with you?
Yes. Well, it's so funny. So I actually moved to L.A. when I was 16 to be an actress. And so I had grown up in Madison doing the CTM shows, and I'd always been a performer. What I didn't know until now is that I got all that talent from my mother. she has become quite the, and especially because we improv the whole thing. So I really think we should have gotten her in like Second City or something like that back in the day.
Yeah, in that voter in the absentee ballot, when she was a good sport about her quarantine hair.
Yes. The update there, she did get a haircut, okay. Which she's very excited about. No, she is a good sport, period. The ability for her to, poke fun at herself and let herself be kind of the butt of the jokes sometimes as far as her ability to do technology definitely lends itself to the humor in a lot of those.
Now, who are you trying to reach with this? Do you see this as for your generation, a younger generation, your parents' generation, a little bit of all of them?
I think it's a little bit of all of them. I think specifically when I choose the topics I want to cover and also the tone I want to take, I'm trying to reach people who are not super news consumers, who are sick of the partisan rhetoric that's been so dominant in Wisconsin politics over the last 10, 15 years. Because I think it's easy to, you know, you follow people on Twitter or whatever, and just like the finger pointing of whose fault and Republicans or Democrats. And like, when most people, I think, just want stuff to get done. And so how do you focus on the issues or the facts, and also the applicable ways that things can change, regardless of the party and who's in charge? And so I think trying to focus on not even moderate and swing voters, but just kind of people who aren't so entrenched on their side, and make something for them, who also, you know, it's also for people who just love Wisconsin. Like, there's definitely a lot of Wisconsin culture and humor that I am incorporating in all of this.
And just in our last few moments, you mentioned the response is part of why you kept doing it. What are you hearing from briefly here in Wisconsin?
The response has been unbelievable. I mean, I've been making political comedy videos. Before this, I was doing it under a show that I created called Below the Fold, which was more on national issues and a lot of, I think, training me to be able to actually be ready for this moment. And so, but what's been incredible is that I've gotten more traction and more of a positive response in 2 months of this project than I ever did with that, which is great. I think it's also like, when you're in bigger cities, and it's been a really refreshing experience after spending my entire adult life in big cities in like the major, you know, it's LA, San Francisco, and New York. And so to come back to Wisconsin and realize that like not that many people make stuff on this, like this kind of stuff that you watch on Comedy Central or HBO, but like make it for your community. And so I think that's probably why there has been such a great response to it.
Kristen, thanks so much for sharing it with us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
That's Kristen Bry of Wisconsin Rapids, now creator of the web project As Goes Wisconsin, her concept to use comedy to inform and empower voters here in the state. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 7:30 on the morning show, Kate Archer-Kent talks to Wisconsin police chiefs about this weekend's protest and the police response. That's tomorrow morning at 7:30 here on the Ideas Network. Now, there were peaceful demonstrations across the state and nation this week to protest the killing of George Floyd while in police custody in Minneapolis last week. And in many locations, including Madison and Milwaukee, violent confrontations between some protesters and law enforcement followed and lasted through the night. James E. Causey is projects reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and a 2019-20 Marquette University O'Brien Fellow. He's lived in and reported on Milwaukee for years and has often shared thoughts and perspectives on Milwaukee's racial tensions and what life is like there as an African-American man. The article he published for the Journal Sentinel this weekend is titled, "Don't Let Looters Obscure Message of Protests. Change Has to Come." James, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Let's start with your main one of your main points in that article, the fear you have that everything going on around the protests and the looting could lead people to lose track of what caused the protests in the first place. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I actually think some of that is starting to take place now. What the main focus should be on is the fact that a lot of African-American men and women are constantly losing their lives at the hands of law enforcement officers. And that's what the message should be. And that's what this is about. And not only losing their lives, there are a lot of people of color who feel like they're constantly harassed by law enforcement officers. But I think what we're seeing due to some of the looting of stores is that people are talking about the businesses are suffering and they're burning up stores and setting cars and on fire and things like that. Well, you know, that is bad, but at the same time, businesses and cars and garbage cans that are set on fire can be replaced, but lives can't.
And you grew up, I think, in Milwaukee. You've been reporting on the city for a long time now. What would you tell people, maybe people who aren't black, who don't live in Milwaukee, what they would need to know about life in Wisconsin's biggest city for black people?
Well, I could tell you about the frustration that I feel and that a lot of young people, I think they feel, because I talk to them often. And it's the fact that when they look around and they see their city not improving, they see that their chances at job opportunities are slim to none. They see that they know that their educational system isn't providing them the best education to prepare for life after high school. And they take a look around and they just see that, you know, they're under constant stress. They hear police sirens all the time. They see, you know, drug dealing, shooting, stabbings, and all these kind of things happen all the time, and things don't appear to get better. But when they look outside of the city and they see other areas thriving, that's enough to make you upset, because you judge the health of a city by how you treat its most vulnerable, how it treats its seniors, how it treats its kids. And if we were to give our city a grade on how we treat our most vulnerable, I think we're a C-minus at best. I mean, when you think about graduation for black boys, reading scores for black boys in fourth and eighth grade, it's among the worst in the country. And when you look at our hyper-segregation that we live under, this city is not improving, and we're not moving the needle enough for people to have confidence, and they're not being heard. And when people are not being heard, it causes all kinds of problems, and they react the way that they're reacting.
Now, as we've heard on the show today and in the news, you know, yes, there was looting, and we'll talk about that some. There have also been peaceful protests that came, assembled, spoke their piece. What are you hoping people hear from those protests and, in some cases, prayer vigils?
Well, honestly, leaders need to open up their ears and hear what the people are saying. And I think young people have been ignored for the longest. You know, even and when I speak young, I'm not just talking about people under the age of 15 or so. I'm talking about college students as well. You know, young people don't feel like their voices are being heard. And when you're not being heard and you know you have something to say and people are not listening to you, that's a problem. So I would like for these protests to lead to honest conversations, and not only conversations, but actions, because action needs to take place right away. I want to know what our city's job plan is. I mean, when you think about it, you know, most cities have a job plan. Like, you know, leaders will say, we want to have X amount of livable wage jobs by such and such time period. We don't have a jobs plan. We don't have anything like that in place. If they do, I don't know about it. And I think most of the citizens don't know about it. And if you don't have a jobs plan or a plan for economic recovery, then that's, you know, how are young people supposed to have confidence in its leaders? You know, how is the city supposed to have confidence in knowing that things are going to improve for them? How are we supposed to know that there's going to be jobs for them in the future? So we have to start with those kind of conversations that we're not having right now.
Talking to James Causey from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about protests in the city over the weekend, what he hopes comes out of them, and his concern that people will lose sight of the root causes of them. You did touch in your piece on your thoughts on looting, James. And a lot of times in other cities, people have pointed toward, well, outside people, not the locals. That's not what you, at least anecdotally, are seeing in Milwaukee. What do you think about who is doing the damage, and what would you want to say to them?
I mean, there's so much stuff going on. I don't know who's really to blame or who's to point a finger at. I mean, you could look at videos. You see a bunch of young people committing acts, breaking into Walgreens and things like that. You see that kind of stuff. But at the same time, if you look a little deeper, it's not just young black people. You have young white people out there doing some of the same acts. I mean, and it's not just here. It's all across the country. I mean, there's a video that was on TMZ that had two white girls painting Black Lives Matter on the side of a Starbucks. And they got called out on it by a young black woman who was filming and saying, why are you doing that? And they was like, well, we're trying to support you guys. And she was like, I didn't want you to do that. And you, by you doing that, they're going to blame us, black people, for that, not you, and you're the ones who's doing it. So we have to keep in mind that it's not just this isn't a case where it's just black people going wild. It's a lot of people of all different races and colors out there doing wrong, and they're not all from Milwaukee.
Now, we've got all these protests that have happened. You're hoping a conversation starts. You're hoping for actual change. What would be the first step? What would be the first positive sign that would make you think, okay, maybe this time we're going to move in the right direction?
Well, first things first, I don't want a reactionary type response, because typically when something like this happens, we try to come up with a real quick, fast response to try to make people happy and make all of this go away. And usually when that happens, they toss a lot of money at some community organizations. They give money to the United Way or something like that. And this agency or an agency distributes this money to other groups. And then you just hope you don't have to deal with it, you know, for a couple of years or so. Well, we've done that before. We need to have deep-rooted conversations. We need to understand and find out what's on the minds of these young people. Why do they feel hopeless? Why is it that when they see violence all the time, we simply tell young people to get over it, and we don't provide the counseling for them that they need to deal with the stress and trauma that they experience all the time? Why is it when someone like Andre Lee Ellis has his garden on 9th and Ring, where he's seeking mentors, you know, he has a struggle to find mentors every year to fill a garden. So part of it falls on us, too. We have to be there to help our young people. We have to be there to be some guidance for them and talk to them and see what's on their minds and give them the proper counseling and leadership and mentoring that they need. You know, so it's a lot of things that need to take place. So first of all, I think, you know, and I'll be willing to organize this if I have to. We need to have the major leaders come to the table, sit down and listen. Don't say anything. Just listen. And I know that police have their job to do. I know the mayor has his job to do. Aldermen and other politicians have their jobs to do. But what we need, they just need to listen and hear what's on the young people's minds, because these young people are their future constituents. These are the people who they're going to be soliciting to get votes from in the future. So they need to know what's on their mind, and they need to try to address these issues. So that's where it starts.
We're talking to James Causey right now. He's project reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We're talking about an article he published this weekend. It's titled, "Don't Let Looters Obscure Message of Protests. Change Has to Come." You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you take part in any of the protests across the state or region this weekend? Do you agree with James that the attention on looting and the looting itself could obscure the message of the protests themselves? If you're a person of color, what do you think your white neighbors need to understand about race in America and here in Wisconsin in particular? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with James Causey. He's a project reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He wrote an article this weekend, "Don't Let Looters Obscure Message of Protest. Change Has to Come." You can join in at 800-642-1234. We heard James lay out some of the many problems facing young black people in Milwaukee and elsewhere. Where do we start? What kind of things do you think need to change? What's your reaction to what happened last week in Minneapolis, to the protests since then? Do you worry that the looting takes away from the initial message of the protest? Have you been involved in protests yourself? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. James, you said earlier people need to listen to the young people in particular. I was wondering if you could highlight some bright spots of people doing things in Milwaukee. You mentioned Andre Lee Ellis of We Got This Milwaukee. We talked him on the show last year, I think, inspired actually in part completely, James, by a piece you had written, a profile you had done on Andre Lee Ellis. Can you talk about some of the work that people are doing in Milwaukee that you think needs a wider audience?
Oh, yeah. Sharlyn Moore, the work she's doing at Urban Underground, really teaching young people social justice and activism. That's another key feature that she's doing. You know, the work that Homer Blow does with working, you know, raising money for toys for kids over the summer and constantly instilling education and information to people every day through his work on his through broadcasts. Then you have the Vaughn Mazes of the world who really goes unnoticed, but he does that kind of gritty work, him and Frank Nitti, where they work with people on a ground level, people that we honestly ignore all the time until they do something really bad. But they do more work and keep stopping fights, you know, stopping fights from happening, working with young people who don't have a place to go. Through their programs as well. I just think people like that really need to be supported and not wait until something really bad happens and then we turn to them. I mean, that happens all the time. And I think if we really want to address these issues, it shouldn't just fall on the people who are doing that kind of work either. I mean, I often hear that people don't know how they could help or what they could do. You know, when I write stories like this, you know, typically what I hear is, I'm a white woman or I'm a white man and I live in such and such place. How can I help? I don't really know what to do. Well, you could always come down and volunteer. If you could volunteer your time, you can volunteer tools if they need tools, services, money, whatever you could volunteer. Everybody has a role to play in this.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. We've got Charles on the line in Eau Claire. Charles, hello.
Hi. I was wondering if you had an idea of an example of, like, were these proper – you were mentioning that talks needed to happen between these individuals and, say, elected officials. And I was wondering if you had an example of a community that had a problem like this and did it well, you know, kind of addressed it properly.
You know, that's a very good question. Very few people really know how to have conversations around the issue of race, because race is really at the center of all of this. I can tell you what I did a couple of years ago. One thing I did this project called Where I Live, and I asked young people to tell me and describe in either poetry, a short story, pictures, or any way that they felt comfortable in describing the neighborhoods that they grow up in and what they see on a daily basis. And they did. And some of the things that they see and have experienced would scare even the bravest of us. And what I did was I brought elected officials to this meeting. And it was called Where I Live. And some of these young people, I had them sit at tables with some of these elected officials and talk to them about what they see on a daily basis. And, you know, and I want to hold them accountable to doing something to make sure that their neighborhoods are safer and that they don't have to experience these things. It starts with something as simple as that. You know, listening and finding out what the problems and issues are. Maybe it's something like, you know, you live in a one young lady I remember, she says that she's sandwiched in between two drug houses and she can't play outside. So she plays inside because of gunshots. You know, so I told the alderman in that district, you need to get in on this. You need to figure out how you could get these dope houses closed. So it's that kind of stuff that needs to happen. And, you know, it just starts as simple as conversation. And I always encourage anyone out there to, you know, when you're doing lunch sometimes, and we could go back to doing lunch, do lunch with someone who doesn't look like you. Invite people into your circle that doesn't look like you and just listen. And you'll find out that you probably really have a lot more in common than you fail to realize.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to James Causey from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about protests, reactions to police killing last week, and how to move things forward and actually move the needle, change things in Milwaukee and elsewhere maybe this time around. James, can you talk about just following what you're just saying, seeing the humanity in people who are different from us? Because it's, you know, in a case like this, it's easy. We have a script. It happens every time. Bad thing happens. Protests, riots, tear gas. It's the same conversation pretty much every time. How can we break through that and see, I don't know, people as people and not cliches?
Well, you know, I think we got to have these really deep, hard conversations, and not having conversations that make people who don't look like us feel comfortable. I think we've run into this conversation where, you know, people want to have conversations, or they say they want to have conversations, but when a conversation gets difficult or hard for them to handle or accept, and people don't want to talk about privilege and things like that, then the conversation, people start feeling funny. They always say, I'm not like that, or no one I know is like that. But sometimes you just have to hear it. In those difficult conversations, sometimes feelings get hurt. But guess what? There are a lot of people of color who are hurting every single day that are never heard and never listened to. And so if we're not able to have these difficult conversations and really put action to these conversations and try to make people's lives better, we're never going to solve this. I mean, we every single time something like this happens, we always say we need to have a conversation about race. Well, I'm sick of saying what we need to have. We just need to do it.
You know, not too long ago, I talked on the show to somebody who's part of a team that facilitates these kind of conversations and tries to help people hear each other and to break through some of the defensiveness people could feel on either side of that conversation. I mean, is that what we need? Like trained, I don't know, facilitators, mediators to be in the room to help these things happen and, you know, make sure they don't, you know, just end up in making people mad on both sides?
Of course. I think we need all the professionals to come to this conversation that we can have, because guess what? We have to have trainers to teach us how to drive. We have training to learn how to be better parents. We have training to learn how to become better dads, better moms, training for almost every single thing. We have training to learn how to ride a motorcycle. But we don't have training on how to deal with the one thing that this country has a hard time wrapping its arms around, and that's race. And until we have some experts that can really show us how to do this and keep us at the table, so when people get mad, they don't just say, okay, I'm done with this conversation, I don't want to hear it no more, I'm walking away. No, no. You need to come back to this table and you need to sit down and listen, because until we start ironing out some of these issues, these problems will still exist. So you need to, if you really want to be a part of the solution, don't walk away. Don't take your ball and go home. Stay here and listen and try to come up with some solutions. That's what we need, and we need experts to show us how to do that.
In our last just a minute now, James, you know, we've been through this so many times and had the same conversation, and then we're back here again. Do you have hope? Do you have a way of finding hope, given that it seems like we just keep coming back to the same place?
Well, I do have hope, because I've seen how it can happen. For instance, I participate in this class called Unlearning Racism. Yes, there's a class called that at the YWCA. And in that class, even as an African-American man who's been black all my life, I learned a little bit about myself when it comes to race as well. And I was in this class with about 40 students, and majority of them were white. But and I think a majority of them were in there to try to learn something and try to be a part of the solution. That class needs to be taught everywhere, and everybody needs to participate in that, so we could start to having, you know, thoughtful conversations and moving the needle forward. But it starts with those simple kind of conversations and people participating in events like that.
James, thanks a lot for taking the time to talk with us again today.
Anytime. Thanks a lot.
That's James Causey, projects reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and a 2019-2020 Marquette University O'Brien Fellow. He's with us today to talk about his history of living in and reporting on Milwaukee. We focused on an article published this weekend in the Journal Sentinel titled, Don't Let Looters Obscure Message of Protests. Change Has to Come. You can keep sharing your thoughts over at the Ideas Network Facebook page and follow the latest news about what's going on in Wisconsin with protests and everything else going on at WPR.org/news. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, we'll get the latest on protests around Wisconsin and around the country and the response from police and government leaders. We'll hear from a former Madison police chief about police tactics for dealing with individuals and with protests. And amidst all the big news, we'll take a break and look at some of the biggest moments in Wisconsin sports history, and you could share some of your favorite moments along the way. Join the conversations about that and more. It's all coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.